Dat is van mijn moeder.
Vous étiez pris par les embouteillages, c'est ça, ce matin?
Non, en fait, on... Attends, je coupe l'enregistrement.
Ah, pardon, je coupe.
Merde, c'est pas ça. Ouais.
You can see the castle is starting to peek out at the back there. So historically it would be a lot more open. So that entire green, which is rhododendron, massive group, would probably not have been there. So you could easily see the castle from, especially up the way that we came. And just historically, we call this the... Kach?
Chariot?
Yeah, chariot is meer goed, hè.
Ah, goed. The... vehicle that you push to load things.
Yeah.
So you have historically, which in Dutch we call it the koetsweg and the karweg. And that's so it's the chariot, the roads for the chariots and the road for the carts, which actually just means that one's for the guests, where you drive up and see the castle, and that one is hidden in the back for the staff and all the deliveries. And all we still use it like that. So that's a bit, but still. That's just to indicate historically. And so here we are in more or less one of the cores of the old historical English park, which was also planted at the beginning of the 1900s, end of the 1800s, beginning of 1900s. Same with the castle. An English or the English park style is more or less is shown by various small groups of very large monumental trees. And of course, throughout the years, a lot of the borders have been planted with everything, from rhododendron up to types of bamboo, types of a lot of different types. My predecessor was a big fan of bamboo. But you still have remnants of that. And one of those trees is the person who is responsible for the nature management on the field says it's the most beautiful tree in the entire domain, which is this one. So go a bit up more up close a bit more. The problem is that one of the three arms, regrettably last week, split through. But this is very typical for the old English landscape style. Like, if you have a tree which has a more of an abnormal form, try and stimulate that instead of trying to correct it to have, like, what they do in forestry, try and have a trunk which is as straight as possible because you want to have good wooden boards out of it. So this is more just for the aesthetic part. So that's a very... And the thing is now one arm just split off, regrettably. But it will mean that when we remove it, we will see this one a lot better from the road over there because it was a bit hidden from the public. No one really knew that it was here, but only if you really like trees. This species actually is also one of the coniferous or the gymnosperm trees. Like, this one has actual needles. And this one is very easy to recognize. It's called a Douglas fir. And how do you know it's a Douglas fir? One indication is you can look on the ground and on the cones. These are the actual cones as you know them from from the coniferous trees. And you see every scale has an additional, what they call a small tongue, which is like with three points, which is inserted like next to it. If we find a cone of a normal fir or a spruce or something like that, you will not have that, like the small, which is like flames or like tongues which are on the side. That's very typical for Douglas fir. And then the other one, and that one's the most fun, if you take the needles of a branch, maybe this one has been on the ground for a while, but if you take some of the needles, and you can, because the one you have to ask is me, and you break them up in two halves and you smell, I don't know if it's the same in winter, but it smells like lemon. Very, very typically like lemon. You have some. If you do the same with a normal fir, for example, it will smell like Christmas tree. It will smell like. So this one is actually like lemon.
Yeah.
Citronella.
Like, and you have some spruce trees where they say it smells, there you have some similar qualities, but spruce is also very easy to, or silver fir is very easy to distinguish by needles. So this one is very, very typically the Douglas fir. Hmm. Why is it called the Douglas fir? Historically, a lot of plants were brought into Europe by so-called plant hunters, which were people who just got on a boat to the colonies and just went into nature and tried and bring back as much as they could find. One of those people was David Douglas, and apparently the fir, or the Douglas fir, the introduction of Douglas fir has been attributed to him. David Douglas. But if you look at the scientific name of this tree, which is Pseudotsuga menziesi, it's named after Menziesi, which was also a plant hunter, so it's not really clear which one it was, but
And it's said that this looks like mice, no? Mice starches.
Oh yeah, like the tail of a mice. Yeah,
the tail of a mice. Yeah.
I think everyone has a little bit their way of distinguishing between.
This one is going to be folding up.
So that one was starting to crack, and they tried to hold it up. And take a bit of the weight off, because apparently the tree is not made to make a branch like this. But apparently by pulling it like that, we create a torsion on the branch. So it's always a bit, especially very old, like with what they call veteran trees, you never really know if what you're doing will be better or not. Once you have to start doing something, it's mostly not a good sign. But we have a very good person in our team who will try and remove that branch as clean as possible, and so we can keep the rest of the tree. I heard there are some people which are from a very long way away. So just to indicate, one of our typical Limburg landscape trees that you'll find a lot in forest is the one over there with the very clear and very easy distinguishable white trunk. Mm. Someone asked me before as well. It's a birch tree. You have that. That's very, very easily distinguishable by the trunk, because there are no other species outside, maybe one type of poplar at a very young age, which is a bit white like that. But that one is really typical for our forests here, which comes in most. It's not really cultivated. More in Scandinavian countries, it's actually cultivated for wood. Like everything in IKEA is made of that species. But in our country, it's not. It's mostly the tree which accompanies the trees like oak and beech that you want in your forest, that you planted in your forest, and it comes in naturally. So,
and one of the first trees.
Yes. So you have it's what they call pioneer tree species. Yeah. It means it uses a lot of light. So it needs a lot of light to grow. So that means if you have an open field where there's only like a bit of grass or some lower plants, the seed will germinate very quickly and it can grow really, really fast. So it's equipped to take over another an open space of land. To take it over, it's equipped to do that as quick as possible.
And it doesn't need a lot of nutrients in the soil, no?
No, it's also for the sandy, like more nutrient-poor soils of our regions here. It's very it can grow very good on that type of soil. Could I ask you maybe not to sit on the tree? Just, I don't know if it's going to crack further, so it's just for your own safety.
Je vais le faire parce que je veux que tu prennes
prendre. I think there was some type of infestation maybe at the beginning on that, which is why they put the cable to try and keep it up, to try and keep the living parts up. But you can see, because there's a lot of dust in the opening. Apparently there is some type of insect or I don't know if it's ants or something else. It has probably been attacked by something. So that's why we have to make a clean cut, as clean cut as possible, so it doesn't infest the rest of the tree. Okay, so we move. Why? I have no idea. But this one is the one the edible type. You will see the fruits on the ground. But apparently with the drought of this year in our country, the chestnut production was very, very small. You can see it actually produced just small ones like this. So it's just probably due to the drought that it don't. There are some trees like hazelnut, for example, also had a very, very bad year Oaks had a wonderful year for some reason. They were acorns were everywhere, but yeah, it's just they respond in different ways. Yeah, so that's the outside part, and then the fruit actually, or the seed is actually on the inside. Yeah. I see a lot of you picked up the red leaved one.
Yeah.
It's the one where at this point there are no more red leaves on there. It's only with the green one. Yeah, it's what they call the amber tree. I think that's just. That's literally translated from Dutch. It's called Liquidambar styraciflua in Dutch, and it's not from. It's more. I think it's American in origin, but autumn colors are wonderful for that tree. It's one which is often used in parks and gardens like that, which with a very typical leaf like the star form leaf.
The
moles. Yeah.
Yeah, it's also a lot of them.
Yeah, yeah. Here is We have one part where we try to put nets to keep them out, but even then they just. Fold for you any minute now, so here we are on the inner square of the castle. I don't know in England, and we know that the castle has 1900 and that the plants or the English park was placed at the same time. So these are the same that we saw at the beginning. This here, the boxing trees that we talked about. As you see here, if at one point they become unstable, it becomes very difficult because it's next to our. There are a lot of our offices are here in the castle as well, so it becomes a bit dangerous. But at this point, they're still in great condition, so we hope to keep them like that. We also passed another one you see going up by the roof. We passed another one coming in, so there are a lot of those. We also have some remnants of them in the museum where they've been surrounded by other forest trees, but they're still there. They were like the small group of the English park, which was there, is still there. And there's one peculiar thing about it is that most of the when you find these trees in the park, they are mostly accompanied by this one, which is a cedar tree. For some reason, probably as I said, there was like an old baron which collected a lot of different types of species to distribute. Probably those two came in a package. For some reason, and while when they were planted, this one was not far behind. How can you recognize this one? It's also a coniferous tree, and it's very easily recognizable. It stays green the entire year, so it doesn't lose its needles. And all the I don't know if there's a branch somewhere nearby, but the needles are formed around like small. You have the branch, and then you have very small side branches around, and around those side branches you have the needles, which form in a circle. It's very typical. It's because the other species, they're more sideways on the branch. And
there's a low branch there.
There's a low branch there. I think you can see it. Oh, yeah, maybe here as well. So you see you have a very small branches, and it just forms a circle around it, while a lot of other coniferous trees form their needles in one plane. Another one I took also to show you that it doesn't always have to be needles. These are also like very... scaly type of tree. We passed that one next to the playground there. It's also a type of cypress from Japan, Cryptomeria japonica, just to indicate what diversity you have within one group, not counting this one. So the beech tree, which is next to that one, typical tree for our country as well. The typical beech tree. It's probably younger and was planted afterwards, it came in naturally and they kept it. But I think it was planted, and we see now that they're competing a little bit for growing space. So we'll have to see. I think probably the first one we will lose is probably the beech tree because it doesn't have a lot of room to root. Underground, especially with all the pavements here, and we will see how he holds up. But apparently, he's starting to decline a little bit. Beech tree is very easy to
recognize.
Is it from this tree?
No, that's not from. It's probably from one in the borders there.
Oh.
Something more exotic. The cones of this one are very, very big one, more like spruce. How do you recognize a beech tree? First off, the trunk is very smooth. If you see in a forest in Belgium, if you see a very smooth trunk, probably it's a beech tree. The next thing is the leaves also. They're ovoid, as they call them. And they have no, it's not like in...
They have no teeth.
Yeah, it's not like a saw, or like it's not, it doesn't have any indentation. So it's smooth. And if you hold it like this, you will see that it's waved like that. And also, but I don't know if in winter it's still there, if you keep it up to the light, you will see that the side, there are very, very small hairs on the side, which is also very typical for a beech tree. So more or less unmistakable in from
and for
trees.
French speaking people, there is a kind of ezelsbruggetje,
mm-hmm.
Which is because the beech tree is often people confuse the beech tree with the hornbeam, who has similar forms of leaves. But in French, there is a very funny phrase that helps you remember it: le charme d'Adam, c'est d'être à poil. So, être. Has hairs,
yeah.
And le charme has teeth.
Yeah, we'll see one further on.
Le charme d'Adam, c'est d'être à poil. I find it very poetic.
and just some additional. So a lot of trees that we'll see like in borders like this, also next to the castle, like that one to the corner, which is leaning a little bit. It's a magnolia tree. And why is it doing so well here? It's because that is a very hot wall. The sun really heats up that wall, so it's a more exotic species which can grow here because it's next to that wall. If we take it away and put it in the middle of the lawn, it will probably die off. But that's why we have a lot of like Lagerströmia, another type of more exotic trees that my predecessor just tried. And they grew well here, so it's... Finally see the castle. We walked around it a little bit. So that's the old castle which started as a privately owned castle, which is then with the sale of the domain has been accompanied with the sale every time. So now at this point it houses our offices, some meeting rooms, and here at the bottom it's called the... Vaklap, which means it's a workspace for people who want to the old types of crafts. Yeah, which they want to here they can exchange ideas and try and work together to see how to work. They come with their own projects and we try to create a platform to support them. But that's not about trees. So if you turn around, you see a lot of the old English park examples. So in front of us, that's a spruce. It's the Nordman spruce. I don't know if a lot of people this time of year, it's the preferred Christmas tree at this point because it keeps its needles. I will show you why in a couple of moments. And also here you see it's an old English landscape style because also it had a side branch which just started to dominate, and instead of just cutting it off, they just kept it going like that. I don't really know if it was an accident or if maybe they constructed the tree to be like that. That's also a possibility, that they tried to train that side branch to make it like that. Then on your right you have that one, which is also a very, very common, especially next to streets, because it's a tree which is virtually indestructible. You have, it's very good against like salt that they use for when it's freezing. It can keep very dry. With the drought this summer, we saw that these trees were doing very, very remarkably well. And it's very, very easy to recognize because the trunk, it shapes. You have like... parts of the bark which peel off
like a snake,
yeah, something like that. So it sheds its bark.
They all became white in Brazil.
Okay,
because
yeah.
They all lose the
they don't have enough moisture to keep it. And there is also some evidence that suggests that it collects all its pollutants or unwanted like toxins and all that kind of stuff. It collects it in the bark, and that's why it sheds it. So that's why it's probably a very, very, very stable and stable tree. This one was also probably planted at the beginning of 1900, so it's beginning to be a very, very large, large.
Plane tree.
Yeah, it's, sorry, I didn't say it's a plain tree. I don't know if there's a leaf on the ground. Yeah.
So this is the typical leaf of a plane tree, or the plane tree which is used, because this one is a cross between the eastern plane tree and the western plane tree. It's that cross which is being used next to streets and in parks everywhere now at this time. If you ever come back to Belgium and you visit Paradisa, it's a zoo in the French-speaking part. It has enormous plane trees. Very, very. But don't go to a zoo for the trees. But still. So, and that's a very, very typical leaf. You will probably recognize this leaf from the flag of Canada, but it's not that one. So just keep this in mind. This form of leaf. Because it can easily be confused with the maple tree, which is actually the species which is on the flag of Canada. But it has a very similar form. But for a plane tree, every leaf is separately on the branch. And for a maple tree, every leaf is in twos. So it grows like this, and then the other one is in 90 degrees on top of that, and then the other one, that's for maple. And this one is just spread over the branch in different orientations.
And the fruits also keep on stay on the tree in winter.
Yeah, and
so
also
it's easy to recognize.
Easy to recognize
maple
fruit
has
as well.
Some kind of fruit?
Sorry?
No, maple has like the one that fly. If you drop them, they like a helicopter drop down.
Yeah.
So that's Norman spruce, plane tree. And then we have here, you see there's a younger example right in front of it and a very sick example to the right of it. But the large tree at the back there, originally there were two. The other one, the trunk, is still on the side of the road there because they didn't want to get rid of it. But historically, two oaks were also planted in front of the tree. So that's the oak tree, and it's the indigenous oak tree. So how do you know that? I don't know if you have... So this is what they in Dutch call the summer oak, but it has nothing to do with summer. So it's this type of leaf. So you see it's very clear indentations and it's rounded at the edges. And we have two indigenous type of oak in Belgium. It's the Quercus, which is the
species name.
Yeah, the species name. And then you have Robur, which is the summer one. And then you have Petrea, which is the winter one. But it has nothing to do with winter and summer. But this one is probably the one you will see the most. It has a very short... what they call the petiole, which is what they use to connect to the branch, like the petiole of the leaf. It's for the summer oak, it's very, very short. And in the winter, it's very, very long. And if you look at the acorns, it's the other way around. So the acorns for this tree, for the summer one, the robur, they are on longer petioles. And for the winter one, they're close to the branch. So that's a bit of the confusion there.
So for Dutch... speaking people, zomereik zittenblad.
Yeah, and winter. Yeah. And they call, I think, if I remember correctly, I think they call this white oak also in English due to the color of the wood. If you compare it to the red oak, which is like of a red hue color, this one is more pale and more white. So we tried to replace it with two new oak trees, but that one for some reason got sick and we will have to remove it or replace it in the coming months. And then one thing you have to just keep in mind for further on into the walk. If historically you were on those stairs there, that group of trees would not have been there. So you will be able to see very far into the distance, depending on some groups of trees, like you see the Norman spruce and some other relics of the old English park, but you would be able to see straight through the forest. And we will go around and see where that view ends up. So keep that in mind further on into the walk. Then just for a very short detour, I will go to the north. And please, you can stay here. I will run.
No, but we come with you. Yeah. Let's meet the food.
Show you how to distinguish the Abies genus. compared to the, you see the needles, as I told you, like we saw the cedar one at the, the castle there, they are around. Here they are sideways on the branch, like that. And you see, if you go close to the branch, it has like a small foot, like a plunger, which it attaches to the branch. And that is also why the Nordman spruce at this point is so popular as a Christmas tree, because it's because of that foot. That's why it doesn't lose its needles as fast as other, like the Picea genus, where it's just with a small, very small wooden stalk connected to the branch. So that's just to distinguish a little bit in the coniferous trees. But as I said, it's an art in itself to try and distinguish coniferous trees by on site. Sorry?
Where does this one come from originally? The Nordman spruce?
Nordman.
No, it's okay.
I think probably in North America, somewhere on altitudes, probably, but I don't really know.
Because that's maybe also a funny story. In the 19th century, when there were not no fancy cars yet, a way to show off your status and your wealth was to plant exotic trees, so that you had this kind of network around the world.
Sure. That's what you see a very large example of that here. Yeah. Where they just said, "See what we can do." Compared to other. Here the museum is closed. So what we just entered is the Bokrijk Open Air Museum, which is the domain is most famous for. This started out as a collection old type of architectural styles, like how they build the old farms, and like you see an example, the windmill in front of you. And then there was a large group of people working here who went all through the country and deconstructed a house completely and built it up with the same materials here. At this point, we're working on restoring a lot of the historical houses by using the same old techniques as they used to, and try and reuse as much of the material as we can. But as you see, it's been weathered throughout the year, so we try to restore it as faithfully as we can. If you have any questions about the houses in itself, that's not really my area of expertise. There's a lot of information next to the houses and everything, I don't think that's why we're here today. Why is the museum? The museum is a challenge in itself when you look at green collection management. Why? We try to only include trees which are historically accurate. So you have some examples of like historical park trees which are scattered throughout. But next to the houses, we try and not use different types of or try and use exotic type of species. We try and use the species which historically could have been next to the house. Of course, we have to make a certain choice. Do we take the year where the house was constructed, or do we take a certain area? There is one area which we will not pass today, but where they also have actors who play out the year 1913, like the year just before the war. And there we just try not to include any plants which were introduced after 1913, which is a very large challenge because there is almost no or very limited historical proof for that. Also because Belgium was a bit of a passing through country through other, like Germany and France and the Netherlands and in the direction of England. So I try just to look at where was the species introduced at that time. If it's been in England for 100 years, probably it could have been here. But there's also a discussion like a farmer would probably not use any surface of his farm to just put plants because they look nice. He probably would have planted vegetables and fruit and everything he could eat and use as much as possible. So there's a bit of a trade-off between what we want to be aesthetically pleasing and what we want to be historically accurate. So it's a bit of a new area to work in as well, because there is not really any precedent for this type of research or type of work. But we try to be as accurate as you can. Yes.
What is this tree?
Yes, I was coming to that one. These are linden trees. So linden or lime trees in English, Tilia in the scientific name. It's also they use the fruits for tea as well. We just saw one of the.
No,
I think
it's another tree. No, that was another one.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
This one.
but it's. Oh no, that's
yeah, maple. It's maple. Yeah.
So this is linden tree. It's also used for the fruits are also used for tea.
for making tea. It's very, very famous for that one. And these trees, they have been trained to grow. It's what they call the lane trees. They have been trained with cables and stakes and everything to keep a direction like that, which is also an historical practice which they used quite a lot. Also, we will see some trees where they just cut out the top, and where it just grows out in different types of branches. Also, an historical use of wood, where they tried, and especially with willow trees, we will see a couple of them. They've been cut recently, where willow trees, which they use to make to weave baskets and all that kind of stuff. So we try to try and use that type of management as well in the museum to try and show some of those historical things. When we go in here on the left, where one of our people is doing is working, the border on the left has been planted last year. Is where we're trying to use indigenous types of plants and then try to plant them in a more natural way. Something it's like the where you have large surfaces of flowers, also for pollinating insects and all types of that. We have a lot of surfaces that we installed like that with. We tried indigenous species, and that's the first border when the people come in, where we had a lot of positive feedback about flowers in the beginning of the year. And you see after that, it's a hedge, and it's made of it's Cateus meidoorn. I have no idea.
Meidoorn.
Hedgerow.
Hedgerow.
So hedgerow species. It has like the larger thorns. And that's a species which was historically used to weave hedges. So what we're doing here now, it's just in the starting stage because it's just been planted, but we're working together with a company from the Netherlands who use historical weaving techniques for hedges. And so in the beginning of next year, they will come and train the branches to weave them historically through each other. So it's not yet finished, but it's what we're trying to make here.
Can you tell a bit more about why people would do this and how?
Historically, I don't really. I think a lot of this was also an aesthetical choice, but for this, yeah, I think like for with willow trees where they cut out all the branches. I don't really know historically.
Because how do you train such a tree?
You have at the beginning there was like one large. You still see the cables, like you have the lights, but you see the iron, like the. Yeah. The wire, and they had large. I would suppose because I wasn't working here, but they have large stakes on which they connect the branches, and they cut off all the other one, the side branches, and they just train them in one direction or in one plane, and then in the end, those branches become dominant, and then you end up with something like this. It's what they also do a lot with the plane tree that we saw in next to streets and all that to try and keep it in one. In one plane also, so you don't have a lot of branches hanging over the road and type of thing.
They also do it with fruit trees, I think.
Yes, you have, yeah, in their that's true, that's where they keep it, try and keep it next to a wall, try and keep it more manageable. Yeah, that's true. There are some examples of that in the museum as well.
So this size is more accurate.
So if you jump over the hedge here, you're outside of the museum.
Okay.
So that's and that's then you can come back into the English park, is where you have like again the oaks and a lot of different that kind of, so that one is not. Yes, that one's the catalpa, yeah.
A hedge is a fence?
Is used as a fence, but it's actually a plant.
Ah.
Yeah.
In Flanders, because of a typical disease of a certain type of bug, which made a hole in the trunk, so the sap flow was impeded, and that's why a lot of the adult trees of this species died off. So we still have
invasive species as well here. Or like why did they got to suffer from these bugs? The bugs were invasive.
I'm not sure on that. So you will see these trees, but there are not a lot of adult examples anymore. Only if they're very isolated, so the bug cannot reach it. We have a very old one. This is the elm tree.
There is one in the center of Brussels.
Yeah, really? Okay, yeah. Yeah, you have one in Hasselt next to the library.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you pass next to the library in Hasselt, I don't know where you're staying, but there's a very large one in front of the library as well. And the elm tree, it's very easy, or in this family, the Ulmaceae,
It's very easy to recognize because it's a bit crooked. And also that's why, just because a lot of leaves are like symmetrical and around the same axis. But this one, if you look at the base of the leaf, you see that one side is always lower or higher than the other one. And the top, it's not as clear on this leaf, but also it just turns a little bit like that. You will see some examples of that. I think it's probably why I like it. I probably like it because there are not many of them. So it's when you see one, I'm mostly, it's very relatively rare. But it was very much used for its wood. It was in a lot of villages and where it was
easy
planted.
To cut. They cut part of it and it's grow back like a châtaignier.
Here you have a bit of an example like that. So we still have them, but it's historically it's accurate, but it's very hard to have a large adult example of this one. We will continue by this road just because those are the houses which have been renovated last year. So the village square of the Kempe, which is the region of where most of these all of these houses come from. But the attention I want to direct your attention to the very large oak trees which are here. They're not in the best condition, mostly because it's been managed as a lawn around it. But we're seeing now, so we have to treat the soil a bit to try and benefit them a little bit. But the fact that they are here is probably because historically there was an old access road here, and it's probably there are probably remnants of trees which were at only spaced intervals to accompany the road, and the road turned from the castle a little bit to the side there, but because historical maps the scale is not always as good, we're not really sure, but probably because of their age and their size and the fact that they more or less form a little bit of a line, if you look in between them, I think they probably were a remnant of that. It's the same as we saw in the beginning, the summer type of oak, the white oak, the indigenous one.